Chapter 7. Understanding. How is he? Chris whispered in Mary's ear as he came alongside her where she was keeping watch on the gull receiving treatment at the skilled hands of Nathan Jackson, following the treatment of her own injuries.
He's better. He was pretty badly beaten, but there are no critical injuries, although you wouldn't know it from the way he's been complaining.
She gave the gull a look of pure contempt before turning back to Chris.
How's Alex?
Despite the injury Alex inflicted upon her, Mary was not mad. After learning what set Alex off, Mary could not imagine Alex reacting any other way.
Reasonable. I managed to convince her not to tear Lamar a new one.
Mary smiled at his choice of words, giving him a look of deep affection, one befitting the lovers they would someday be instead of the officers serving together today.
Unfortunately, I don't think he is going to be that reasonable. Ever since Nathan put him back together enough to talk, he's been screaming bloody murder. I don't know if we can pacify him as easily as you did, Alex.
We'll manage.
Chris's voice took on a hard edge that told Mary a great deal. He was tolerating this man on his ship by the barest fraction, and if Gull Lamar knew what was good for him, he would carry out the mission and put this incident behind him. Chris Larrabee was not a man to be made an enemy.
You okay?
Chris touched her chin tenderly as he examined her soft skin for any signs of injury after running into Alex.
I'm fine.
Mary reached for his hand and laced her fingers between his long enough to know she was grateful he had asked.
It was just a scratch.
Chris nodded with relief before taking a deep breath and stepping forward to approach Nathan and Lamar. Next to him, Mary slipped flawlessly into the persona of Lieutenant Travis, protocol officer, and prepared to make the introductions between Captain and Gull. Nathan was standing by the treatment bed, running a dermal regenerator over the skin of Gull Lamar, miraculously mending broken skin with the aid of 24th century medical technology. While all of the Cardassian's injuries had yet to be repaired, the former Gull appeared much healthier than when he was first carried into sickbay. He lay across on the bed, openly disdainful of the human's ministrations, and judging by the healer's thinly veiled scowl, the feeling was mutual.
He should be around in no time,
Nathan announced, preempting the captain's questions about his patient's welfare.
A couple of broken ribs and some extensive facial injuries I've been able to treat with the dermal regenerator and a bone fuser. I don't recommend he run a marathon, but he's well enough to leave sick bay.
While Nathan did not say it but was evident to anyone who knew him well enough, the words good riddance was on the tip of his tongue. Chris wondered if his annoyance was due to the gull's arrogance or because Nathan learned why Alex attacked the man and was loath to treat such a monster. If so, Chris could appreciate Nathan's feelings because he was no happier about having Lamar on his ship either. As it is, Chris fought the urge to throw the man in the brig for what he did to Alex and was most chagrined by the circumstances requiring him to treat Lamar like a guest instead of the filth he was.
Gull Lamar, this is Captain Chris Larrabee.
It is about time you made an appearance.
The gull promptly sat up in the bed. He gave Chris a once-over and showed clearly he was not impressed with what he saw.
Considering how warm a reception I received at the hands of your crew, I would have thought it was your first priority to come here and explain yourself.
Both Nathan and Mary tensed, wondering what kind of reaction that response would receive from Chris Larrabee. However, the captain did not offer any rebuttal. Instead, his eyes narrowed with an unreadable expression neither Nathan nor Mary could decipher.
Gull Lamar, circumstances have forced me to accept we need you for the mission ahead, and while you are on board the Maverick, I assure you nothing like the earlier incident in Four Corners will occur again. Those two men,
Chris gestured to the security officers waiting at the doors into sick bay,
will ensure no harm comes to you while you are on my ship. You have my word on it.
Your word? And what of the lunatic who almost killed me? Are you going to throw her into the brig or not?
I have spoken to Commander Stiles,
Chris answered with what he considered to be an amazing amount of restraint. Inwardly, he braced himself for more complaints when he revealed his decision regarding Alex to the gull. Not that he cared because Chris meant his promise to Alex. He would put his command on the line for her.
She assures me no further incidents will take place. I have confined her to duty in astrometrics and have ordered her to give you a wide berth.
Judging from the glowering rage descending across the man's face, Chris and the others guessed the gull did not find this at all satisfactory.
You consider that an adequate punishment? She could have killed me with her assault, and you return her to duty as if nothing happened?
She gave me her word she would not harm you.
Chris's jaw clenched as he reminded himself spacing a man was immoral, no matter how satisfying it might be. Instead, Chris maintained his indifferent mask.
That's good enough for me.
Well, that is not good enough for me. I want her thrown in the brig for the duration of my stay on this ship. I make this request most strongly.
Uh-oh. Mary thought to herself as she saw the glimmer in Chris's eyes that told her the captain had reached the end of his patience. The captain stared at the gull before speaking calmly without looking at them.
Doctor, Lieutenant, I should like a moment with Gull Lamar if you please. Take the security men with you.
No one was about to question the captain when he used that tone of voice, and very soon, everyone vacated the room, leaving Chris alone with the gull. The Cardassian's expression was one of smug satisfaction when he saw the others go. Lamar probably assumed the reason for Chris's dismissal was to avoid humiliating himself in front of his crew.
Now, let's get one thing straight, Gull Lamar of the Ninth Order.
Chris hissed once they were alone.
You are on my ship and on my ship, what I say goes. If I choose to ignore this matter, then that is how it will be. Don't give me an excuse to make a ship-wide statement about the real reason Commander Stiles attacked you and then rescind my security protection when the hordes of outraged Starfleet officers come hunting for you. Trust me, rape tends to provoke that response in us.
Lamar's face turned a shade paler, unprepared for Chris voicing the crime that would have seen him executed in any other regime. Still, he was not a man about to allow another the upper hand, especially an alien.
You do not scare me, Captain.
Lamar said after composing himself enough to respond.
We both know at this moment I am in a position to demand quite a bit since I hold considerably important information regarding the mission. I am certain Starfleet will induce you to give me whatever I demand. If I require your protocol officer to be served to me on a platter for my evening's pleasure, you will have no choice but to comply if you wish my cooperation.
Chris grabbed him by the throat and shoved him against the treatment bed before the gull could even see how his comment had landed. Keeping him pinned, Chris's fingers tightened despite Lamar's best efforts to pry his digits loose.
Don't overestimate your importance to the mission. So far, you've given us nothing but vague intelligence, and a planet with trinucleic fungus tends to stick out. We know this area of space pretty well, while you have only guesses as to where it might be. As for Lieutenant Travis, if you so much as look at her cross-eyed, I will break every bone in your body. Do we understand each other, Gull Lamar?
Perfectly.
The man scowled, unable to do much else in the face of such a threat. The captain released him and stepped away from Lamar, who sat up, rubbing his throat in discomfort as he cast Chris a hate-filled glare. Chris had no doubt Lamar wanted to kill him and would have done so if not for the circumstances they both found themselves in now. Something flashed in the man's eyes at that moment, something that put Chris on guard immediately. Instinct gripped him, and though he could not explain why, he recognized the gleam in Lamar's eyes. There was more than anger there, there was also calculation. Something else was at work with the skull of the Ninth Order, and Chris was now suspicious of what that might be.
When you are ready to leave,
Chris turned away and started towards the door of sickbay, wishing this creature out of his sight.
I'll have Lieutenant Travis show you to your quarters. You have free run of my ship, Gull, but I expect you will feel safer if my men kept an eye on you.
Lamar glared at the captain with contempt, disliking the fact this human had put him very properly in his place. However, he had one card left to play, and he would do so with relish before the captain of the Maverick left his presence.
She was delightful, you know. Of all my charges, Stiles was my special project. I enjoyed her repeatedly. There is nothing more satisfying than allowing yourself the pleasure of thrusting into tight flesh, especially when they are begging you to stop. It only made the thrill all the more worthwhile.
Chris paused briefly at the cruelty of his words, aware Lamar was saying it to reclaim some dignity after their earlier confrontation. Forcing away his outrage as this sick bastard described the pleasure he wrought from Alex at the expense of her sanity and her self-respect, he refused to be baited. Ignoring Lamar, Chris continued out of the room, reminding himself when this was all over, he would derive similar pleasure when he threw the son of a bitch into the brig and left him to rot. There was only one place Vin Tanner wanted to go after his shift had ended, and that was to see Alex. He spent what was possibly the longest shift of duty on the bridge, thinking of nothing else but how the woman he cared for so profoundly was faring. The ship was buzzing with rumors about Alex's outburst, and while only the senior staff knew the truth, Vin was sure not even they had any real understanding of what Alex endured. While he had no idea about the specifics, there was not a shred of doubt in his mind Alex was brutally assaulted during her stay in that Cardassian prison. He only needed to hear her speak about the camps to know she told her tale from personal experience. Chris was absent from the bridge most of the time Vin was at the con, probably because the captain was forced to deal with the fallout of what happened. Buck seemed to shift uncomfortably in the command chair as if he was just as anxious as Vin to know what was happening. As the first officer, Buck worked most closely with Alex, and though he constantly complained she had not succumbed to his charms, everyone on the bridge knew Buck enjoyed his friendship with Alex because it was not sexual. It felt like his shift would never end as the bridge was gripped with tension for the next several hours, worsened considerably by Chris and Josiah's heated argument a short time before Vin's duty ended. Judging by the way both men looked after the meeting, it appeared neither was very happy with each other. Josiah and Chris, who had always shared good relations, were openly at odds over something, and whatever it was, Vin was sure Alex was at the heart of it. As it was, the rest of the bridge was expecting Chris to announce that Alex would be relieved of duty, and while all of them hated the idea, there could be no other alternative for the captain. However, the announcement did not materialize, and they were even more confused. Vin didn't bother to return to his own quarters after his shift ended, making a beeline for Alex. Chris ordered security guards to keep her in her quarters when Vin left her there after the attack on Gul Lamar in Four Corners. A part of him applauded her actions. Vin would have done worse. Anyone who would treat another person with such degradation ought to be killed for the animal they were. Another part of him wanted to march down to sickbay and rip Lamar limb from limb for bringing Alex so much pain. Lamar was the cause of all the wounds Vin sensed in Alex during their unintentional mind meld. Vin could not even begin to fathom the violence and horror that must have created it. When he reached her quarters, the security men were gone, adding to his confusion. He was certain Chris would have kept the guard there and decided he did not care one way or another as long as Alex was all right. Reaching for the door panel, the soft chime was received by a strained response.
"Go away."
Vin was not about to do that.
"Alex, it's me."
There was a pause before he heard her answer again.
"Come in."
Letting out a sigh of relief and having the sense to know it was an invitation only he was privileged enough to receive, Vin did not waste any time slipping past the doors as soon as they slid open. He stepped into the dimly lit room and was confronted with the same destruction that astonished Chris Larrabee a short time ago. Vin's eyes swept over the ruined belongings and furniture in the room, and he had to confess to seeing a similar scene once before. Like her, Vin lost his temper and embarked on a rampage of equal intensity.
"Holy shit."
I know.
Alex sighed, drawing his attention to her. She was lying on her bed, hugging a pillow.
"I lost my temper."
Vin approached the edge of the bed and looked down at her.
"No kidding."
He sat down on the edge of her bed, surveying the destruction before him. Vin had to admire her ability to be extremely thorough and thought he was the only one capable of such wanton destruction when his Vulcan passions got the better of him.
"You okay?"
"Yes. I decided not to kill him."
At that moment, she sounded more like a little girl making a somewhat troubling confession than a Starfleet officer. Vin nodded and responded with a smile, becoming accustomed to the idea of seeing her so vulnerable. It was usually the other way around, and the nature of their relationship always had her being his moral support.
"That's good to know. What changed your mind?"
"The captain."
Alex swiped the tears from her eyes after crying for hours.
"He told me I had too much to live for, to sacrifice my life because of that bastard."
Wherever he was, Vin thanked the captain silently, saving him the trouble of using that same argument when he sought Alex out. Chris Larrabee could be a hard-nosed son of a bitch, but Vin could say with absolute confidence that as a friend, no one could be more reliable than the captain of the Maverick. Vin was glad Chris convinced Alex to consider another path and reminded himself to thank the captain later.
"He's right."
Vin moved further up the bed so that he could meet her face to face. Alex did not seem to mind his presence as Vin nestled next to her, and they lay side by side staring at each other.
"You do have a lot to live for. I couldn't imagine this ship without you."
"I close my eyes, and I see him sometimes."
Alex blinked fresh tears away as she spoke.
"I have dreams that make me so scared. I don't know what to do, and I thought if I killed him, I could make it all go away.
It doesn't. Just makes it stay with you longer, except you got another set of dreams to go with the ones you already have. I don't want that for you.
Alex reached for him and let her palm caress his cheek gently.
You make things so clear for me. How do you do that?
Vin held her hand against his skin, savoring the silkiness of her palm and thinking he was at his best when he was with her. Somehow, all the insecurities of his life seemed to fade away when he was with Alex. Only Chris Larrabee and the rest of the seven made him feel such a part of something special. Vin had the inkling the bond forming with Alex was almost as deep as his camaraderie with the men he called his friends. Each time she smiled and touched him, his soul seemed to soar as magnificently as the ship he flew through the infinity of space.
Because you make it clear for me, I won't ever let him hurt you, Alex.
Vin held her hand tighter, intermingling his fingers between hers as he held her hand.
You have no reason to feel bad because of what he did. I know that doesn't take away the pain or the hell you've been through since, but it's the truth. You're the victim, and you have the right to feel pain. No one said you have to be that strong, and no one said you have to do it alone.
He paused for a moment as he summed up the courage to say the right words.
You never have to worry about being alone, darling. Ever.
Alex smiled a little.
Darling, you only call me that when we're in that silly holo program.
Yeah, just like you call me cowboy.
Suddenly Alex reached over and kissed him, cutting off anything else he said with one sharp intake of breath. Vin had no idea what to do as he felt her lips brushing against his and her tongue gently slipping into his mouth. He had no idea what to do and could say little in protest until he felt her running her fingers through his hair as she pulled him closer. The scent of her body had changed. It felt electric somehow and seemed to fill all his senses. She became his entire world as he felt her lips exploring his mouth tentatively and felt something immensely satisfying about feeling her so close. Then, just as suddenly as it had begun, Alex pulled away and was mortified by her behavior.
Oh God, Win, I'm sorry.
She couldn't believe she put him in such an awkward position, not to mention embarrassing. Just at that moment, she needed to feel him close, needed to feel his strong arms around her, and that train of thought led her to this wholly unacceptable situation.
I don't know what came over me.
She rolled over, her cheeks burning with humiliation, and Alex wondered if things could get any worse. For an instant, she allowed herself to succumb to the needs of her physical body, to the deep cravings ignored during the past 3 years. Each time she thought of making physical contact with a man, before being revisited by memories of her ordeal, Vin was the first man who was able to make her forget enough to do something about it. And yet it seemed so terribly wrong to force him into this position when he could not reciprocate.
I am so sorry.
She started to weep and rolled away, unable to face him. Vin felt bewildered, but he was not angry. He was chagrined he could not respond in the way she needed because feeling her so close was something he always enjoyed, and Vin did want to make her feel good. Vin never wanted her to turn away from him and reacted the only way he could think of to make things better. Sliding his arm around her waist, Vin pulled her close to him so they could stay spooned comfortably against each other. It surprised him how well she molded against him, and as he buried his face in her hair and whispered softly in her ear, Vin marveled at how right this all felt.
It's okay, I didn't mind.
It was the truth. Vin always liked it when she touched him. While a human would have been reduced to gibberish by now, Vin's inability to experience sexuality allowed him to appreciate the moment's intimacy beyond the physical act. It made this moment more meaningful.
I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable.
You didn't. You made me feel privileged and honored you chose me.
Alex leaned into his body, enjoying how he felt against her and feeling her apprehension and embarrassment melt away with his arm draped over her waist.
Don't you know I love you, you jerk? I wouldn't choose anyone else.
She let out a deep sigh and felt the weariness in her bones starting to catch up with her now she was in such a safe and warm place. Vin continued to hold her in his arms, allowing her to fall asleep in his embrace. He stayed the rest of the night after she drifted to sleep, delighting in the heat of her body pressed up against him. Vin decided heaven was falling asleep with her scent in his lungs. He also knew he would never again spend another night where he would not lie in his bed wishing Alex there next to him. Alex knew nothing of this except she was safe, and for the first time in too long, she did not dream. Chapter 8. Briefing. The first briefing where Gulamar was required to make his appearance was one of great consternation to those who were present. Even though Chris had told Alex she was not required to be here, the science officer insisted there were some things she had to stomach while the Cardassian was on board, and this was one of them. As she sat in her customary position at the table with both Vin Tanner and Buck Wilmington flanking her almost as if they were both ready to run to her defense at a moment's notice, she did not meet her tormentor in the eye. If anything, she looked everywhere else but at the Gull. The mood was somber, and the imagery of rape camps and brutality, so fresh in their minds, prevented the senior staff from viewing Lamar as a sentient, let alone an ally. Chris recalled the Gull's words about Mary and kept the protocol officer in reach at all times. Even though logic dictated there was no possibility of the man trying to harm her before an entire room of people, the manner in which he had requested Mary be made an offering still sent a chill through the captain.
"You're all aware of the present situation,"
Chris began the meeting, deciding to get down to business. Despite their personal feelings towards the Cardassian, there was still a mission ahead of them, one of great importance that could not be viewed with anything but their complete attention.
"The Dominion believes there is a planet in the frontier capable of sustaining trinucleic fungi, the key ingredient to producing Ketracel White. Unless we find it first and protect it from the Dominion, the Founders will have an unlimited supply of white to feed their Jemadar warriors. This information comes to us courtesy of Gulamar, whom I have requested be present at this meeting so we can fully assess the danger we will be facing."
Chris glanced in the Cardassian's direction and gestured for him to begin.
"Thank you, Captain Larrabee,"
Lamar said smoothly, keeping his eyes trained on Alex most of all because he knew his presence bothered her and he enjoyed making her uncomfortable, even now.
"As you know, I was stationed on Cardassia Prime following my government's alliance with the Dominion. Since I was one of the few who publicly opposed the idea of such a move on the part of Cardassia, I was given a low-level post and watched carefully by the Obsidian Order."
"The Obsidian Order no longer exists,"
Ezra Standish spoke up immediately. He did not trust this man, not simply because he found the Cardassian personally offensive, but something about his manner gave the security chief reason to be concerned. Like Section 31 of the Federation and the Tal Shiar of the Romulan Empire, the Obsidian Order was Cardassia's covert intelligence agency. Unlike Section 31, whose existence was still a rumor no one could substantiate, the fearsome presence of the Obsidian Order was well known. Its ability to strike terror into the hearts of those who came into its sphere of influence was unparalleled, and anyone who encountered the Order often regretted it if they lived long enough.
"According to my sources on DS9, the Jemhadar wiped out the bulk of the Obsidian Order and the Tal Shiar, and they attempted an attack against the Dominion before they struck the Alliance."
The security chief allowed no one, save those closest to him, to see he made the statement with some satisfaction. Lamar, who knew he was being suspected of a good deal more than just defection, sidestepped the question quickly enough.
"There are still some left. Gul Dukat, our illustrious leader, still does not quite trust the Founders completely, and my loyalty is an internal matter that has nothing to do with the Dominion Alliance."
"I stand corrected,"
Ezra said with a bit of a smile, but knew he cast enough suspicion for the senior staff to view Lamar with more than just revulsion but also caution.
"Please continue."
"Thank you."
Lamar gave him a look that was next to murderous.
"As I was saying, I knew the Obsidian Order was watching me closely, so I could not make my move. The alliance between the Cardassian people and the Dominion is not really an alliance, as Dukat would have us believe. Even now, as we push nearer to the end of the war, it appears we are their foot soldiers, nothing more."
"Tell us about the documentation,"
Chris urged, not wishing to hear a tirade about the once glorious reign of the Cardassian Empire. Besides, he did not want this meeting to drag on longer than usual. He could see Alex trying very hard not to look at Lamar, and considering their history, Chris thought she was doing a rather admirable job of holding her temper in check. Still, the captain didn't intend to tempt fate.
"You said you discovered documentation showing the Dominion believes there to be trinucleic fungi in this sector."
"Yes, those documents are in the hands of your Federation and have been authenticated."
He gave Ezra a look of challenge, daring the chief to question his words.
"The information supposedly came from Founder spies who claim a stray report to the Space Registry from a ship traveling in this area scanned a planet with geological traits similar to that of one which can produce trinucleic fungus."
"It is possible,"
Alex made herself heard because this was her area of expertise. While Alex preferred being raked over coals than to agree with Lamar, she would not shirk her duty. The captain, who placed so much faith in her, deserved her best. Besides, there was another reason she was determined to maintain her focus despite Lamar being the stuff of all her nightmares. Last night she slept the most peaceful night of her life since her ordeal as a Cardassian prisoner. She did so because Vin held her for most of it. He wrapped her up in his comforting arms and kept her safe from the demons inside her mind. This morning she woke up and found him still there, looking just as contented as she must have been in her sleep, and Alex was stronger for it. How safe it felt within his embrace made her realize their friendship was too precious to risk losing by killing Lamar. Even in death, it would only provide Lamar with one more way to twist her life out of shape.
Since we've been here,
Alex continued to speak, ignoring the expression of mild surprise on Lamar's face as she corroborated this part of his story. The rest of the senior staff were relieved the man's presence was not doing Alex any further harm as the science officer returned to some semblance of her former self.
We've kept this part of the sector relatively safe by patrolling previously uncharted space. Commercial ships can now move freely through the area without having to worry about getting into trouble when a galaxy-class warship is guarding the main space lanes.
As a result,
Buck chimed in.
More territories are being charted, even without the official cartography we're undertaking.
Exactly.
Alex continued, her momentum building as she explained, almost to the point of forgetting who was in the room with her.
It is possible one of these ships, while registering their flight plans and log entries, as it is required by the Spacing Guild for private and commercial star travel, may have discovered this planet the Founders are searching.
So, does this mean we're going to have to go through all these records?
Mary winced at the thought.
Afraid so. I've got people pulling double shifts, searching through the data we've accumulated since we've been out here. So far, nothing yet, but there's still a lot of ground to cover. It would help if we had more specific information.
Yeah.
Buck agreed with that observation.
You got any more tricks to bring to the party, Golimar?
I brought you what I know,
he said stiffly, disliking being questioned, especially by someone who was a former prisoner. Her actions had done irrevocable harm to his career in the Ninth Order. When she first attacked him, he had not remembered who she was. Understandable since his memories of her from that time were a stark contrast to the present. However, now that he knew who she was, his desire to make her pay for the trespass burned white hot.
The Dominion plans to launch a strike here, perhaps as early as in the next 7 days. They intend to establish a foothold on one planet in this sector before beginning the search for the fungus.
Is it true that they will come with cloaked ships?
Julia Pemberton inquired because she was working with Ezra to plan some kind of defensive perimeter that would alert them to any cloaked vessels.
I believe so.
Lamar studied the redhead with interest and found she was just as pleasing as the rest of the women at the table. However, it was Styles he wanted, and when the time came, perhaps even the captain's woman.
There were rumors of a warbird being taken during a battle. The ship was intact, and I believed Vorta scientists were eager to examine its cloak. Considering how fast they work, it would not be unreasonable to assume they might have installed the feature in several Jem'Hadar warships for this engagement.
Makes sense,
Vin added.
If they go on silent running, they can move an entire fleet through Federation space with no one having the least idea of them being there until they got to us.
Yeah, but we're still talking about a planet that exists only in theory.
JD pointed out that fact, and Chris admired the youth's analytical thinking because until the location of this world was determined, their plans for defense would be at a disadvantage.
I seriously doubt the Dominion would launch an expedition like this, through enemy territory, to chase a phantom,
Ezra declared.
The Jem'Hadar are formidable, nor are they stupid.
Perhaps desperate is the correct word,
Buck stated.
They must be running low on their supplies of white. If they've turned to the Breen for assistance and are preparing to make a run through Federation space because of one ship's log, then their strength isn't what we originally thought.
Buck's right. When they first showed up, they didn't need anyone's help. After Ben Sisko caused the aliens to shut down the wormhole, they lost access to the white. Suddenly they needed allies, first, with the Cardassians. Then they launched a non-aggression pact with the Romulans and when that collapsed, found new allies in the Breen.
I would not underestimate the Dominion,
Lamar spoke up. He did not like the idea of the Dominion coming to Cardassia as a substitute for the lack of white. The notion was outrageous. The Cardassian Empire was not the replacement for a drug.
Desperate or not, they have established a foothold in your territories.
True, Chris could not deny that, but he would not tolerate the Cardassian implying the Federation's weakness when Lamar's own race's record with the Dominion was no less stellar.
However, a foothold in Federation space is better than the chokehold they have around Cardassia Prime.
Lamar's eyes narrowed and barely concealed hatred, and suddenly Chris saw the resurgence of menace he sighted in sickbay in the man's eyes. Lamar reminded him of a cobra waiting in its basket, dancing the tune of the snake charmer when required, all the while waiting in the shadows to strike. Why were they worried about the danger when there was an excellent reason to fear the one within? More specifically, the one at the table with them. Mary immediately stepped in to diffuse the tension, used to pregnant pauses when two opposing factions reached an impasse.
Gentlemen, we are here for a reason and time is short.
She reminded them gently as both Chris and Lamar continued to eyeball each other.
Right.
Chris cleared his throat and continued to stare at Lamar. The Cardassian was not about to jeopardize his standing on the ship just yet and broke contact first.
As usual, Lieutenant.
He smiled at her with sickly sweet charm.
You are right. We have a long way to go before we can ever be considered allies, but for the moment, let us cooperate in the spirit of mutual need.
Alex noticed how he was looking at Mary and immediately felt her skin crawl. For a moment, the look of him was so familiar that Alex thought she would be sick. Thank God her coloring made it difficult for anyone to see that Alex was ashen with disgust. Closing her eyes, she swallowed the bile crawling up her throat. How many times had he looked at her the same way before he? She felt Vin's hand tighten over hers under the table. While everyone else was watching the furious eye contact between Gull and Captain, only Vin noticed how she struggled to rein in her emotions. Vin was so proud of Alex and how she stayed centered on the mission instead of letting the trauma of Lamar's presence hurt her any more than it had. As it was, Vin struggled to keep his own anger in check. Each time Vin thought of this animal touching Alex, using her in the way he had, destroying everything about her with his brutality, Vin wanted to tear him apart. Instead, Vin forced himself to keep control because if Alex could, then so could he.
All right,
Chris decided he had just about enough of this for the time being. The tension levels in the room were escalating, and he wanted Lamar to be out of his sight and away from Alex before things reached breaking point.
Let's call it a day. I want a status briefing tomorrow morning on the state of our operational readiness. Alex, the Gull's entire report is in the main computer for your analysis.
Thank you, sir.
Her eyes trained on anywhere but Lamar, Chris noticed. He had the feeling this was how she maintained her composure in the Gull's presence. Chris would not make it any more difficult for her than necessary. With that, Chris dismissed the meeting and took it as a sign of good timing because Alex was the first one to leave the room.
You okay?
Vin caught up with her a little further down the corridor from the briefing room. Alex paused and waited for him, taking a moment to catch her breath. Her heart was pounding as if she had been running a marathon, but though she was shaken, she took some pride in being able to endure Lamar's presence. For the first time since her discussions with Chris Larrabee in her quarters, Alex felt as if she might get through this nightmare.
Yeah, I think I am.
Good. You know I'm not gonna be too far if you need me, right?
Once again, he remembered how she looked the night before and wished them all to be just as peaceful.
Alex, how are you holding up?
Julia interrupted the tender moment when the chief engineer walked up to them, her face full of concern. Alex realized then what Chris was so determined she understood. There were people in her life who would help her through this. She wasn't alone.
I'm okay. As long as Lamar stays away from me, I won't have the urge to kill him.
Poor Mary has to put up with that jerk.
Julia muttered, glancing down the corridor where Mary and Ezra were engaged in conversation with Lamar.
Just make sure she's not alone with him.
Alex turned away from Lamar, unable to keep looking at him. The sight of him made her skin crawl. The very notion Mary would have to grease the wheels of diplomacy between the captain and the Gull was one task Alex would not have wished upon anyone. Both Julia and Vin stiffened at the suggestion because the thought never occurred to them Mary might be in danger. However, now that it did, both realized the captain shared similar concerns. It explained why Ezra remained close to Mary during her dealings with Lamar, and when he could not attend to the situation himself, assigned security officers to take his place.
He wouldn't dare,
Vin said, but he did not sound as sure as he liked.
I need to get down to astrometrics.
Alex declared after a moment, deciding she needed to limit as much time as she could in Gul Lamar's presence. Besides, the job at hand gave her mind something to think about, other than dismembering him limb from limb.
There's miles of data to go through to find this planet we're searching for.
I know what you mean. We've been working late shifts trying to boost power to the deflector shields, the phasers, and just about everything else. I hope it's gonna be enough.
Vin did not comment and believed when the Jem'Hadar came, it would still be an uneven fight. Even though he did not like to consider himself a pessimist, the helmsman was realistic. When the enemy arrived, it would be in force, and all the preparations they were making would do little in the face of that threat. The only way the Maverick would survive an encounter with the Jem'Hadar fleet was to find the planet in question and start screaming at Starfleet for all the reinforcements available. Before he could add anything further, Vin looked up the hallway and saw the Gull approaching them. Mary was two steps behind him while Ezra held back, doing nothing, which somewhat surprised the Vulcan because Ezra was just as aware of the history between Alex and Lamar as the rest of them. Vin decided he would question Ezra about it later. Right now, he had more significant problems.
Commander Stiles.
Lamar's voice penetrated Alex's consciousness as she looked up to see him standing inches from her. Instinct tore her in two directions, the first being the need to step away and the second to react violently to his hated face before her.
She's got nothing to say to you.
Vin placed an arm on the girl's shoulder to drag him away if the man did not take the hint to leave. Lamar was not about to let her escape the sin of casting aspersions on his story during the briefing.
Oh, I'm sure that's not true. There was a time when we were very close indeed, weren't we?
Alex felt her stomach clench in rage, almost speechless by his audacity. A red haze was descending over her senses at that damn leer on his face.
Get the hell away from me before I kill you.
Okay, we're going.
Juliet took her arm to lead her away before the situation escalated any further. The engineer wanted to stick the man in her warp core, but at the moment, she was more concerned about Alex's state of mind. Allowing Vin to handle the Cardassian and noting Ezra's approach in the background, Julia forced Alex to turn away and began ushering her down the corridor.
Come now,
Lamar called after her with triumph.
We did not always tie you up, and towards the end, you were rather enjoying it.
That's it.
Vin dragged him off, with the Cardassian being able to do very little to prevent his forced removal against Vulcan strength.
Mary, help Julia get Alex out of here, please.
Alex's expression was ashen when Julia forced her away, and Vin could imagine the horror and humiliation she must have endured at the hands of this sadistic bastard and the nightmare she endured now. Lamar's words had no effect on Vin's opinion about Alex's incarceration because he had been in her mind once and knew nothing experienced was at all enjoyable. She was broken into a thousand pieces because of this Cardassian, and no vulgar words spoken by the man could ever convince Vin otherwise.
Vin, don't hurt him.
Mary pleaded, even though she felt the man richly deserved it. However, there were more significant issues at stake at the moment. The safety of the Federation depended on this soulless creature who had loyalties to no one except himself.
I won't hurt him.
Vin scowled at the Cardassian, who remained unrepentant as Mary joined Alex and Julia at the turbolift. Ezra finally reached them and grabbed the Gull's other arm, helping Vin restrain the man until Alex was gone. Unfortunately, their guest was far from done with his barbs yet.
Maybe you can look me up while I'm on board, Commander. It would be a pleasure to get reacquainted.
Lamar grinned jubilantly as the turbo lift opened and sighted Mary and Julia, driving Alex into the small space. The woman was staring at him with nothing less than dismay, which afforded him some measure of vindication, even though it was not nearly enough as far as he was concerned. However, such tallies could be left until it was time to make the final accounting.
I would suggest you remain silent about now, Gull.
Ezra advised as Vin dragged him back to the briefing room and shoved him inside.
My friend is not as restrained as the rest of us.
Despite his words of support at Vin's handling of the Gull, Ezra kept a close eye on the situation. The Gull knew he was in a position of advantage because the Federation needed him, and it was apparent he was going to take great pleasure in tormenting Alex as he had once done in that hellish Cardassian prison. Ezra was duty-bound to protect the man. But he was also under the same obligation to Alex, and, truth be known, Ezra was curious about what the helmsman had in mind. Once they were alone in the briefing room, Vin released the Gull, and Ezra took his cue to do the same. The Gull seemed unafraid, perfectly aware they would not violate Chris's order and harm him. However, the smug expression on his face as he stared directly at Vin amused Ezra to no end. It would only force the helmsman to become more creative in pursuit of satisfaction while keeping faith with the captain's standing policy.
When you had your fill of her,
the Gull gloated, confident the discipline of Starfleet officers would leave him free to continue his sadistic taunts.
You will understand.
Sorry, I don't have the equipment for it.
The Vulcan deadpan so perfectly it did Ezra proud. The security officer remained out of the way for the moment, allowing Vin to deal with Lamar.
What I do have, however, is none of the Vulcan restraint and all their telepathic abilities, so when I tell you to stay away from Alex, I mean it. You go one foot near her, and you'll be regretting it until the day you die.
The threat in Vin's voice was clear, and one, not even the Gull, could feign away as male posturing.
Your people need me, so let's not delude ourselves, shall we, Lieutenant Tanner?
In a flash of movement so fast that Ezra barely registered it, Vin's hand grabbed the Cardassian's face. His fingers pressed against the man's cheekbones as Lamar let out a startled gasp. Ezra was uncertain what was happening as Vin held Lamar in place for a moment. Vin closed his eyes and let the man feel the invasion of his mind. Thanks to Mary, Vin had developed a better understanding of his Vulcan telepathy and could use it to meld. At present, he was not probing for deep thoughts, just enough for the Cardassian to know a telepathic link had been established. When the Gull's knees buckled under him, Vin kept his iron grip, holding the man in place. Ezra debated getting involved but held back because he was curious to see what it was Vin was doing.
Listen to me, Gull Lamar. I don't have any of the disciplines other Vulcans do, so when I go roaming around your head, I don't necessarily know what I'm doing. I could tear you inside out, leave you a gibbering wreck. The potential for how much damage I can do to your mind is unlimited. Now that I got your attention and you can feel me in there, you'll understand this clearly.
Vin paused and glanced at Ezra long enough to give the security chief a slight smile of assurance that while this experience would not hurt the Gull, it would have a profound effect on how Lamar approached Alex for the duration of this mission.
If you go near her, I'll find you, and then I'll go into your mind and shred every thought, every memory, and everything that makes you the prized son of a bitch you are. By the time I'm finished with you, what's left will have more in common with a Denebian slime devil than a Gull of the Ninth Order. You made Alex beg to die because of what you did to her, but I'm telling you, when I'm done with you, I won't be that kind.
With that, Vin released Lamar, who dropped to the floor. The Cardassian was gasping from the words sent straight to his mind and understanding how near he came to the possibility of living death. Vin straightened up and looked at Ezra.
You better take the Gull back to his quarters. He doesn't look too well.
Lamar struggled to pick himself up, saliva trickling from his lips in the aftermath of his mental torture. The security man looked at the Vulcan with a smirk that was typical Ezra Standish and said with a grin,
I am certain a Gull of the Ninth Order will recover.
I'm sure he will.
Vin agreed as he made his way towards the door.
At least until the next time.
Chapter 9. Sweeten the pot. Something didn't feel right. Alex couldn't put her finger on it. Yet she could sense it as she examined the reports from the ship responsible for the Dominion intrusion into the frontier. There was no reason to dispute the facts surrounding the routine mission of the ship called the Morning Star. The vessel had conducted a trading run through a sector near the Maverick's present location and carried out the standard scans. The information produced, though promising, was too vague to support trinucleic fungi being present on this so-called mystery planet. While the ecosystem possessed some of the characteristics needed for the fungus, the evidence was too inconclusive to justify the Dominion launching an expedition of the magnitude Lamar was claiming. For the first time since he arrived on board the Maverick, Alex was wrestling with concerns that did not involve killing the Cardassian defector. This time, her suspicions were based on more than just her personal feelings, which she admitted was understandably biased. Putting down the data pads Alex had been examining with such deep scrutiny, she eased back into her chair and glanced at the chronometer on the edge of her workbench. Following the briefing, she spent most of the day at this stable inside Astrometrics, trying to find this elusive world Gull Lamar claimed existed. On the floor of the Astrometrics lab, the rest of the science team were hard at work, studying the data they accumulated during their entire time at the frontier to find one planet. It was a needle in a haystack. How the Dominion could conclude that such a world existed with such scant information was beyond Alex's comprehension. What scientific assumptions did they reach to make these deductions? They had no data of this area, and even if the Morningstar had conducted a scan, it could not compare to.
Oh my god!
Alex jumped out of her chair, her heart pounding at where her ruminations led her. Without a second thought, she hurried down the steps from her work area to the main floor of the lab.
Everyone! Stop what you are doing immediately!
Lieutenant Charlotte Richmond, with whom Alex was never on good terms, was the first to speak.
Commander, we have been working on this for hours. We're nearing an answer.
I know.
Alex said, pushing her personal feelings about Charlotte aside because the woman was right to question the order.
But trust me, all of you.
She held their attention and revealed she was deadly serious about the order.
I have a good reason for this. No one is to continue any work on this project until after I've seen the captain.
Charlotte seemed skeptical but nodded in response and kick-started the others into obeying. Alex gave the lieutenant a silent nod of gratitude, knowing Charlotte would have much fodder for gossip once she left the room but thankful for the cooperation nonetheless. Alex hoped she was wrong, but if what she suspected was the truth, the Maverick was in a great deal of danger. Alex raced out of the lab immediately, giving her science department some idea of the urgency of her discovery. There was only one thing on her mind as she made her way towards the turbo lift, getting to the bridge. As she strode down the corridor, Alex had to credit how elegantly manipulative the Founders could be. No under the Dominion was so successful in its efforts at conquest over the Alpha Quadrant. It did not take her long to arrive on the bridge. Chris Larrabee and the senior staff would be present at this time of day. Good. If what she suspected was true, having them all present when she arrived would save a great deal of time. When the doors to the turbo lift slid open, Alex quickly stepped out and saw she was right. Everyone was on the bridge. Predictably, all eyes turned to Alex when she made her appearance, probably because they were expecting her to remain in Astrometrics for the duration of this mission. She could tell from the captain's expression. He sensed something was wrong immediately because it was the only reason Alex would come to the bridge personally. He was correct. If she was right, then they were in more trouble than they could imagine.
What is it, Alex?
Buck asked first.
We need to stop searching for this planet immediately.
That one statement captured the undivided attention of everyone on the bridge.
Why?
Mary asked while Chris merely waited to hear out his science officer, aware she would not make such a statement without cause.
Because there is no planet.
Alex paused in front of Chris and saw the skepticism in the eyes of the others. She didn't blame them. Only the captain and Vin did not look at her as if she were mad, mainly because they knew how much in control she was despite the Gull's presence on board, playing havoc with her insides.
How can there be no planet? The Gull
has probably been lied to, like the rest of us.
Alex spoke quickly because the captain would not have the patience for a lengthy explanation if the ship was in trouble.
At first, I couldn't understand how they could find a planet with the fungus when we couldn't. I mean, we're out here, on the other side of the Alpha Quadrant. It seemed improbable.
That might simply mean we weren't searching for it as hard as they were. We've identified Founder infiltrators in Starfleet headquarters. It's not unreasonable to assume they've been monitoring our log entries.
Buck, as always, was quick to present alternatives. As First Officer, he could do nothing else.
I agree. However, we've charted hundreds of worlds since we've been in the frontier, and not one of them showed a planet producing trinucleic fungus. Suddenly, based on one man's word and some documents, we're expected to believe all the data we've accumulated is wrong, that we've missed something. Now we're turning over every rock in this part of space, looking for what we've never previously encountered.
I don't understand. If we're not wrong, then how could this ship have found what it did?
I've scanned the data. The information in the Morning Star's report is hardly conclusive. In fact, as a scientist, I find it too generic. It contains the most minimal parameters for trinucleic fungus to exist. There is nothing definitive to prove the fungus is there at all. It just looks like a possibility, something to sweeten the pot.
Sweeten the pot?
Suddenly Buck understood what Alex was trying to say, and he did not like one damn bit where that revelation was leading. Chris caught on even faster than his first officer.
Ezra put us on yellow alert now.
Alex's theory splashed over Ezra like cold water, and he winced inwardly at being unable to see the truth until now. From the moment Gull Lamar came on board and Ezra stared into the man's eyes, he knew there was something amiss with the whole situation. Carrying out the captain's order, the ship was soon screaming with klaxons alerting everyone on board of danger.
Will someone tell me what's happening?
They don't need to find the planet Mary.
Vin explained the cleverly built cage the Dominion had tricked them into entering.
They just need to follow us until we do.
Oh my god.
Mary's face drained of color.
You mean the Gull came here to trick us into finding a planet with the ingredients to make white for them?
JD was just as outraged by the deception. Why not? Chris responded to those who still had their doubts. We all know the Dominion is getting cornered on all sides with the Romulans joining the Federation and Klingons. They've used Cardassians as cannon fodder ever since the Alliance, and their strength is not what it used to be. The Breen may be powerful but not enough to stand up to the Klingons, and the Federation of Founders cannot create more Jem'Hadar warriors.
It makes sense,
Vin added because Alex's deductions were tactically sound.
They can't come this far into Federation space without us knowing what they're looking for. Even with cloaked ships, it's still a needle in a haystack, and we'd have a fleet here if we knew they were after Ketracel White.
But what about Lamar? Is he a part of it?
Mary thought the Gull was sincere in believing what came past his desk was genuine. Even though he was an odious creature, did his complicity extend so deep?
I don't know.
Alex shook her head, unable to answer that question.
Odds are he's not. It would be more convincing if he truly believed he was defecting to the other side with valuable information.
All they would have to do then,
Buck explained, and this was the part that scared the hell out of him,
is to track him while he's on board the Maverick. If there's a planet out here with the fungus, then he'll be leading the Dominion straight to it.
It's not that simple,
Chris countered because none of them, save Alex perhaps, could envision the full scope of the danger.
We don't have to lead them to it. We have all the data on board the Maverick for the Dominion to find this planet if it exists. Remember, no one else has charted this part of space in almost 20 years. If there's a planet out here containing the fungus for Ketracel White, all they have to do to find it is to get their hands on all the information we've accumulated.
But the only way they could do that,
Buck said when he realized the conclusion Chris had already reached.
Oh, Jesus.
Is if they take the ship,
Vin stated. Everyone on the bridge fell silent. If not for the screaming of the yellow alert klaxons across the ship, they would hear the dropping of a pin.
We don't have days or weeks before they come after us,
Chris said.
They're already here.
The small fleet of Jem'Hadar ships had been following the Maverick for some days now. They sat in the darkness of space, concealed within an illusion of refracted light and duranium fields. The cloak felt odd to them, but the Jem'Hadar were used to adapting quickly to new situations, and this did not differ from any other. As a race, they had no history. No songs of past victories were sung. They spoke no tales of those who came before them around the campfire. They only had religion, and for that, they would kill and be killed because dying for their gods was a divine gift. The Founders gave them life, and if it required them to live as a soulless race without heart, except with only the spirit of the kill, then so be it. The Jem'Hadar existed for no other reason.
Sir,
the Jem'Hadar warrior manning the sensor array broke the silence on board the bridge of the Romulan warbird Tesmeme. He addressed the Vorta commander presiding over the small invasion fleet keeping the Maverick under surveillance for days now.
The Maverick just switched to yellow alert.
The Vorta considered the news. Starships did not go to yellow alert without good reason.
Do they appear to be in any imminent danger?
No, sir. All operations were nominal until a few seconds ago. They switched to yellow alert for no discernible reason we can tell.
It is possible they may have discovered us.
We have been careful to remain out of their extreme sensor range,
the warrior countered. He did not believe they made some navigational error, allowing the Maverick to detect the small fleet of Jem'Hadar and Cardassian warships led by the warbird.
There is no reason for them to suspect we are here.
The Vorta did not speak for a few seconds, aware of the duplicity employed by some starship captains. After almost 2 years of fighting the forces of the Alpha Quadrant, the Dominion understood one did not at any point underestimate a starship captain. Such mistakes were costly. Those who wore captain's gold were a special breed and recognized as the most formidable commanders of the Dominion War. Unlike the Klingons, who were little more than savages, or the Romulans whose ruthlessness lacked imagination, Federation captains were never predictable. The intelligence regarding one Chris Larrabee gave the Vorta reason to be cautious. Possessing a brilliant tactical mind, The captain of the Maverick was ruthless and imaginative and brutal if required. He was a man of great flexibility. Therefore, when the expedition to take Chris Larrabee's ship was mounted, the Vorta proceeded with extreme caution. The need for the White made failure a non-issue. Unless more Jem'Hadar warriors were created, the Dominion risked defeat. To the Vorta, it was sacrilege. They searched far and wide for evidence of trinucleic fungus in every other sector of the Alpha Quadrant without success. Only the frontier facing the distant space of the Delta Quadrant remained and was their last hope of finding what they needed. No other ship in the Federation contained the information in the Maverick's main computer. The only other way to gain the data would be to launch a full-scale attack on Earth, which was obviously impossible. For the moment, anyway. In the meantime, the Maverick was the Dominion's last chance of replenishing its dwindling supplies of the White. Without it, the Jem'Hadar would go insane and turn upon themselves in an indescribable bloody explosion of violence. Without the Jem'Hadar, the Dominion had no army, and there would be no war. The plan to take the Maverick was desperate, but it was just insane enough to work.
Get me Gul Kumaris.
Yes, sir.
After a few seconds, a Cardassian Gul appeared on the screen, looking impatient as all Cardassians did with any race other than their own. However, the Cardassians had learned much about humility lately and were perfect for the needs of the Dominion as foot soldiers, although they seemed to be under the misconception they were equal. Still, that error in judgment would be corrected at the proper time after the Dominion had taken the Alpha Quadrant.
I gather you have noticed the Maverick is now on yellow alert.
The Gul had anticipated the reason for the Vorta's breaking of communication silence.
Yes, I have. What do you make of it?
I think we have been discovered. The Maverick has no reason to go to yellow alert. We detect no indications of any kind of spatial phenomenon, and there are no other ships in the area to provoke them into this action.
I was afraid of that.
The Vorta sighed.
Well, it matters little anyway. It is a little sooner than I expected, but not completely disastrous.
Agreed. We outnumber them 10-1, and the nearest starship is almost 2 days away. By the time a distress signal reaches Starfleet, we would have done what we set out to do.
My feelings exactly. Drop your cloak and order your ships to intercept on my mark. We shall take the Maverick now.
Drop the cloak.
The Cardassian eyed him through the viewer.
They'll see us.
The Vorta stared back at the Gul.
So.
Proximity alert!
Ezra Standish announced the minute his console started flashing in angry red colors. At least 10 different energy signatures appeared out of extreme sensor range on the previously benign screen and were closing in rapidly on the Maverick. What had been a theoretical discussion only a few minutes before about the enemy lying in wait for them was now a terrifying reality. It was a suspicion no one was happy to see proved right.
How many ships?
Chris Larrabee asked coolly, a stark contrast to the security chief's surgent tone. In the background, Chris heard Buck dispensing the orders that went with red alert while the rest of the senior staff dispersed to their stations. Ezra studied the console screen before him and took a deep breath before responding.
10 ships.
The air went silent with that statement. No one spoke for a few seconds as the number registered in their heads. Once the shock faded, the Maverick's officers began preparations at every station for what was coming at them.
What are we talking about here?
Buck asked Ezra for clarification. Alex took up her position at the science station while JD began sending out the customary distress signal to Starfleet Command. Whether those transmissions would do them any good was something they would not know until after the battle was done.
1 Romulan Warbird, Raptor Class.
Ezra began the inventory of ships converging upon the Maverick. Raptor Class. Chris took it in silently. Most likely, the Warbird captured by the Jem'Hadar.
What else?
4 Jem'Hadar warships, 5 Cardassian heavy battlecruisers.
Jesus.
Vin whispered under his breath.
How long until intercept range?
Chris asked, not looking at anyone. He remained on his command chair, his palms pressed together while his fingertips bounced slightly off his lips as he contemplated the options before them. His crew needed to know their captain had them, or else this would not be a battle but a slaughter. He did not need to look at the surrounding faces to know there was genuine fear in the air, but fear in the air did not translate to blood in the water. They were not done yet, not by a long shot, because Chris knew one thing with absolute certainty. No one was taking his ship.
10 minutes. They will intercept us in 10 minutes.
Chris tapped his comm badge to address the entire ship. He glanced at Mary and offered her a silent promise he would not allow any harm to come to her. Mary reached for his hand on the armrest and squeezed it warmly just once before she retreated to let him continue. All hands, battle stations.